anomaly. Something that deviates from what is standard,
normal,
or expected. An oddity, peculiarity, irregularity, inconsistency, incongruity, a rarity.
Roger that.
Hi, I'm Jen. As a little girl, I dubbed a stand of oaks on my parents' farm the Ewok Village. The name stuck, and to this day, my entire family still calls it that. And I am an anomaly. We were informed this past week by the Parsec Awards that Anomaly is a finalist under the category of Best General Speculative Fanfic... Best General Speculative Fiction Fan or News Podcast. That's a lot of words for a category. We're thrilled and honored to be counted among the five submissions considered to, quote, exemplify excellence, end quote. Congrats also go out to Sue and her new show, Women at Warp. She and her co-hosts are finalists under the category of Best New Speculative Fiction Podcaster / Team. The winners will be announced at the awards ceremony at this year's Dragon Con. Good luck, ladies! In this episode, I was joined by one of my real-life best friends who's known on this show as Sith Jen to interview a representative of the 501st about their organization. In addition to writing for our blog and appearing in various Anomaly episodes, Jen is a costuming ninja and has been working on the stormtrooper armor she plans to submit for entry into the 501st. That's how this interview with 501st representative Josh Powers came to be. Josh and the guys we met from his garrison were very cool. And ironically, one of the guys has made frequent appearances in our Texas Renaissance Festival vidcast. It's the first time we actually met Dagan. He's the Highlander stormtrooper featured in photos in two of our last Texas Renaissance Festival vid reports. You can pretty much bet we'll be sharing a bottle of mead with him this year during the Highland Fling weekend. Just for reference, at the start of this interview, Josh refers to Nick quite a bit. That's his wife Nikki. He talks a lot about her, her mad costuming skills, and their mutual interest in Star Wars. During the episode, you'll hear the distant whine of power tools, the drone of a shop fan, and people coming and going in the background. That's because we interviewed Josh in the lobby of the Tech Shop, a community-based fabrication studio in Round Rock, Texas. Consider it atmosphere. Special thanks go to Josh, Dagan, and Carl for allowing us to interrupt their armor party and for giving Jen a little advice about her stormtrooper helmet. After you listen, make sure to visit the show notes for this episode for the links to all the websites that Josh mentions in our interview. There you'll also find a ton of photos, including wedding pictures, the proposal video he mentioned, and links to related Star Wars Anomaly episodes and blog posts. To find the show notes for this episode, enter the keyword 501st in the search box on our website at anomalypodcast.com, or click on the link in the episode details within the file you're currently listening to. The 501st interview will follow this brief promo from our friends at Weeby Geeks. Please stick around after the interview to hear what's coming up next on Anomaly and Anomaly Supplemental.
Crisis for the geek kind. Top geek officials admit they underestimated the hipster's defense capability. Join the geek revolution and save the galaxy. Geeks from all over the globe are joining up to fight for the future. They're doing their part. Are you? Want to know more? Join Weeby Geeks and the Geek Revolution and save the world. Service guarantees citizenship. Listen to Weeby Geeks podcast on iTunes and Stitcher or online at weebygeeks.net. Weeby Geeks, your voice for the Geek Revolution. Want to know more?
We're here with Josh from the 501st. He's going to tell us a little bit about his costume club, what it takes to get in, what kind of commitments you have to make, how much work it is to make the armor, and then a little bit about himself, because apparently we hear that there is a wedding that involved full armor.
Best geek wedding story ever.
Yes.
The entire wedding party was dressed in armor, and three quarters of the audience were in armor and a costume of some kind. When we get to the story, I'll fill it in, but we basically opened our wedding up to the con.
That's awesome. Tell us a little bit about the 501st.
The 501st is a worldwide Star Wars charity group, started in 97 by a guy named Alvin Johnson, kind of born of tragedy. his daughter was sick with cancer. She ended up dying, Katie. I'm sure people who follow the 501st have seen the pink R2 droid, R2KT. That's named after his daughter. Through her illness and things like that, and after she died, it was something that was born of occupying his own brain. What do I do with this? I need something to do to fill this void kind of thing. And so he started figuring out how to make stormtrooper armor, started wearing it to costume or comic book stores. His buddies then got jealous and were like, how the hell do we do this? And we want some too. And so they all got together and made some really god-awful stormtrooper armor because nobody knew how to make it, really, other than the guys who made the original sets. And so as they started going to comic book stores and things like that, they started attracting crowds. And more people started coming to see the stormtroopers and take pictures of people in stormtrooper armor. And it kind of dawned on them, hey, we can do something with this. And so from, I think there were two guys that are considered the founders of the 501st. Now I think the last census, we're upwards of 8,000 members worldwide. Literally a member on every continent on the planet. There's a guy in the 501st in Antarctica doing a research thing, but he's in the 501st. So we use him as a bragging. We're on every continent. For the United States and Germany and England and one of the larger parts of Europe, it's broken down into garrisons. Some of things like Turkey, there's two or three guys. There's not very many in some, so they're not broken up quite as much as they are here in the States, but it's a paramilitary structure. Legion, garrison, squad, all that. And the size of that just kind of depends on how many people geographically join. Texas is considered star garrison. Texas and Oklahoma are considered star garrison. Don't know my numbers for sure on this, but between Texas and Oklahoma, there's somewhere in the neighborhood of 200. It may be more, maybe a little bit less. To become a member of the 501st, you have to have a constructed costume. You can't just say, I want to join and not have anything to wear. That being said, in the interim, if you have a costume that you're working on, you can go to events with us and be a part of it. To be official member of Legion, you have to have a costume. You have to be 18 years of age. If you're under 18, we have a thing called the Galactic Academy for kids, young adults. And their costume requirements are not anywhere near as stringent as the full 501st, the adult 501st. For lack of a better term, because none of us are really adults. It can be anything from a Halloween costume to parents have figured out, built vacuum mold tables, and have made screen-accurate mini stormtroopers. It's the coolest thing. I mean, it is as screen-accurate as anything, but just put in a minimizer. It's awesome. It could be a Halloween store costume, and they can be in the Galactic Academy. And those kids are welcome to show up at all the events that we go to. As long as they have a parent with them, you know, the parents can't just drop them off and go babysit my kid, you know, nerds. Once you become 18, you have to have a fully constructed costume, and depending on which costume you choose dictates kind of how difficult or how easy it is to get into the Legion. These things vary from a work suit, basically like an automotive work suit, obviously modified to look Star Warsy with a hat and a belt and you're a scanning crew member. All the way up to as complicated as something as what I wear, Boba Fett, Darth Vader, that have a whole lot of electronics, a whole lot of parts, that take a whole lot of work. Stormtroopers take their own immense amount of work. While you're working on your costume, you can go to events with us, not as an official member, but what's called a handler or a wrangler. The people use that verbiage interchangeably. When we're in costume, we never go anywhere by ourselves because of our limited vision, limited mobility, and unfortunately, some of the elements that have started showing up at cons looking to just be jackasses.
Yeah.
So we never go anywhere by ourselves. Preferably somebody, we like to have somebody with us who's not in costume so they have full 360 vision. And mm-hmm. So until they get their costume built, they're welcome to go and they'll get a Wrangler badge. Wherever we go, they go. Then once they finish their costume, you submit it to a group that are volunteers and appointed positions that approve the costumes. I'm currently called, it's a GML, Garrison Membership Liaison, which I just got made one. We're basically the costume judges, for lack of a better term. That's the fun part to me. I like the minutia. I like the detail. I like the tearing things apart and seeing how they work and the detail stuff. And so you submit, and depending on which costume you submit, sometimes your approval can take as less as 4 hours and sometimes 2 weeks. Or more. It just, if you're doing like a first time costume, like all the episode 7 stuff, they are still arguing about what's going to be approvable and what's not. And there's a whole committee that says because nobody's really seen that stuff except for Celebration in person. Mm-hmm. So there's not a whole lot of data there and pictures and things like references for us to say, yes, that's what it was, or no, that wasn't. The original trilogy and even the prequel costumes, there's resource information, so we know what those things are. So you submit it, you wait, you get your yay or nay. If it's a nay, we usually tell people no, and here's why.
No, but fix these things.
Right, here's some things that you can do to fix them. Like just yesterday, poor guy, submitted a Boba Fett. And unfortunately, there's a company out there called Rubies that was licensed by Lucasfilm many years ago to make Star Wars costumes. If you're wearing them to a Halloween party, they're fine. I have a friend that had one that would go into downtown Austin down on 6th Street in the party district in this Rubies Boba Fett and take pictures of people. He had beer thrown on him and various things. Who cares? Somebody throws beer on my Fett armor, I'm going to shoot them. That is a murderable offense, and I could probably get away with it once I explain my position. But so anyway, this poor guy got a Rubies and submitted it, did a few changes, and I had to turn him down. In the email that I sent where I had to deny his application, it took me an hour and a half to type up, okay, here's what you do, here's some changes you can make, and here's where you go to find out exactly what this all means.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, even if somebody's denied, it's more common for somebody to get denied when they submit any costume than to get in their first try, because these things are so detailed that it's difficult to nail it the first time in. It just is. I mean, there's things you always overlook things, or they're just difficult. The unfortunate part of that is we as the 501st get kind of a negative rap about being elitists because of the rate at which we deny people initially into the group. That's because the mandate that Albin put forth and the fact that we do events with Disney and Lucasfilm, we have to look like we stepped off the screen. My Boba Fett, I've been told, is one of the more screen accurates in the Legion. I don't know if that's true. I've seen other Fets that I think are just absolutely stellar, and I see flaws in mine every time I look at it. But I can tell you that I spent 2 years of research before I even started building Boba. I've got thousands of pictures of the actual armor, and I tried to match scratch for scratch and dent for dent and scuff for scuff. And because of the work that we put into them and some of the difficulty in getting some of these costumes through, it kind of gave us a negative rap, which is unfortunate. It makes me feel bad because I'm sure that, like any group, anytime you get more than 10 people, you're going to get an a-hole in it, you know, which unfortunately there are some. Me personally, and most of the people I know, if somebody is working towards a costume and there's something missing on it, or they don't do something to what the costume requirement says, most of us are like, hey, dude, here's some things that we can do to help you get in there.
Mm-hmm.
Most of us are willing to help people, happy to do it. I love building this stuff. That's why I do it. That's part of the reason why I do it. Again, because of what we do, aside from the 501st stuff, Disney will actually hire Legion members to go do events. Like when Star Wars Rebels premiered, the first season premiered at the theater, they did a couple of theater premieres.
Mm-hmm.
Carl, the guy that's inside, was one of two guys hired by Lucasfilm to wear his Stormtrooper armor at the theater for an hour. That's not 501st because we get paid.
Mm-hmm.
So that's Lucasfilm going, you're a Stormtrooper, go over there.
Yes.
And they do that because they know that the quality of our costumes is measures up, and in some instances is better than what Lucasfilm made. Because these things were made once and thrown in a closet.
Yeah.
They were made to last 15 minutes in a scene, whereas when we build something, we have to live in it.
Yeah.
I mean, it has to endure. So in some instances, I think some of our armor is better constructed than what theirs were.
Mm-hmm. What kind of events do you go to other than, premieres and things like that? You mentioned charities.
The fundamental nature of the 501st is charity. None of us built these costumes for Halloween. We didn't build them necessarily to go to conventions, though we do. But even at conventions, it is for charity.
Mm-hmm.
The 501st is actually a 501c governmental charity organization element.
Mm-hmm.
100% of the profits that we make from whatever event we go to, if we're raising money, goes to whatever charity we're championing that weekend. We do a lot of stuff with Make-A-Wish Foundation, primarily, just given the nature of what we do. But we'll do, I think, Comic Palooza this last year, we did a thing, it was a, I can't remember the name of it, it was a cancer charity for kids. Everything from the 100 Club, you know, for officers, wounded officers, injured officers. We've done benefits for them. Any charitable organization that asks, we'll raise money for. Mm-hmm. Along with going to the conventions where we do a lot of the fundraising, we go to kids' hospitals in Armor and visit sick kids on the hospital floor. Sorry, that part always bugs me.
Me too, I cry.
They're hard to do. You know, you prefer to be a helmeted costume at that environment because we're crying under our helmets and you just leave your helmet on and that's it. You know, you just stand there and you're looking like this imposing bounty hunter, baddest one in the galaxy, and underneath you're just like so, you know, we do kids of hospitals. Some of us will go do stuff like kids' birthday parties. You know, it's not official Legion stuff, but we'll take these costumes and do kid stuff. You know, I play with kids, do silly things. There's a comic book store here in Austin called Dragon's Lair that we do a lot of events at. They'll have free comic book day. We do stuff at when the Star Wars comics were released in February or whenever that was. We did an event there. A whole bunch of it just piled into the comic book store and stood there and took pictures.
Book releases, things like that.
Book releases, yeah. It depends. The author that did Dark Disciple, the Asajj Ventress book that just came out, she was just at Book People in Austin.
Oh, cool.
If they ask, then and we have people available, then we'll go. The unfortunate part is that one was last minute, and since this is an all-volunteer organization, my wife and I couldn't go because we had a two-hour notice. But we do, book releases, comic book releases, the movies. You know, we're already swamped with requests from movies for the Episode 7 premiere. My wife and I already have Friday and Saturday of the opening weekend. We're going to be at a Flicks Brewhouse here in Round Rock, actually, doing one of their showings on Friday night, and then the IMAX in downtown Austin on Saturday, and then Thursday, I'm sure we're going to be somewhere. They haven't really even put out all of the requests yet because they're kind of waiting to see if Lucasfilm hits us and go, okay, we need you guys officially at this mm-hmm. event. And so before you get everybody committed over here, we just don't know. We don't know how people are going to shake out yet. So, but yeah, movies, big one. We do a lot of movie stuff when they're airing. When they released The Phantom Menace in 3D, we did an event for that. And the re-release, the DVD, I mean, anything. I mean, basically any excuse that we can use to put that stuff on, we're there. You know, we're there. Yeah.
You spend enough money and time and passion on it. You have to.
And, you know, quite frankly, you get to be your favorite action figure.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, who wouldn't want to wear that stuff? I mean,
exactly.
As uncomfortable and miserable as that stuff is, I mean, who cares? You endure it. You know, you just kind of, afterwards, you just do, you'll see us sitting in a circle and we're all just doing, like, chain massages on each other because we're all just like, oh, God.
Miserable. But the next time somebody calls, you suit up again.
Oh, absolutely.
Here we go.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it doesn't faze us. No, I'm miserable, but here we go. Let's put this stuff on again.
So we're talking about events, though. How many, say for instance, I mean, I know a couple of people who are interested in joining it, but the thing that's holding them back is that they don't know how much of a commitment mm-hmm. they need to make to it as far as attending events.
Sure.
So those of us that work in the real world and have full-time jobs,
and we all
how do you guys
because,
juggle it?
Yeah.
To be considered an active 501st member, you have to do one costume troop a year. It could be 30 minutes, it could be an hour, it could be 17 hours. It just depends on what event you choose to go to, but you only have to do one troop in costume a year. Conventions, comic books, kids' hospitals, whatever you choose to do, as long as it's an official 501st event, just one a year. That's it. No dues, doesn't cost anything other than the price of your armor.
Yeah, the price of getting in, which...
And you know, the thing is, people have to keep in mind is our travel expenses we pay for, hotel costs, if you're flying. With Celebration 7 just happening in Anaheim, my wife and a friend of ours, we drove to Anaheim. You know, we loaded up 6 costumes in the back of his truck and drove 20 hours straight to Anaheim.
I can't imagine getting on a plane with that stuff.
No, I don't trust them. I trust no one with my armor. My wife wore my Boba Fett armor for like an hour, and the whole time I'm walking behind her going, it freaked me out. That's my wife. So, no, there's no way I'm trusting a baggage handler with my armor.
And I'm sure it would be kind of a headache trying to convince people your blaster doesn't actually... My lightsaber, I have an Ultra Saber
safety
lightsaber,
tagged.
Had to get tagged. I'm like, are you serious?
Yep. My Boba Fett, well, the Boba Fett blasters that I troop with are a company called Hyperfirm. They're a rubber resin. They weigh like 2 pounds. They weigh nothing. I mean, you can throw them and they don't break, and they're great for kids. You can hand your rifle a kid and they don't break, and you can walk up and tell they're rubber. I mean, they from a distance, they look great. You get up closer, and you're like, that's not metal. But, yeah, I get safety banded all the time. The funny thing is nobody bothers to look at my jetpack, ever. I've got this huge missile, thrusters. It's hollow. I've got switches all over my armor. If I wanted to level a building, I could put 50 pounds of explosives in my jetpack, and nobody would ever think to look at it. It just it makes me laugh. They're scrutinizing the gun, and I've got... Well, we all know Boba. He's got everything everywhere. I could hide 1,000 weapons on me. It's a false sense of security.
You have Darth Vader and you have Boba. What was your first costume you ever...
I actually don't have a Vader. I just have Boba and a Biker Scout right now. I have kind of an 80% finished Jedi. Yeah. Just because at a certain point, you just can't wear armor anymore. And
yes.
So I thought, oh,
Jedi's
nice.
Pretty low maintenance.
It's like wearing hot PJs, but PJs nonetheless. I'm working on a Sand Trooper next. I can't do clean costumes. They bother me. Like, my best friend Carl is a Stormtrooper, and that shiny white armor just...
There needs to be some stuffy...
I like to look like I work for a living. Yeah. You know, I'm actually going to force myself to, when I make my wife, she got a set of what's called the Jessica Stang Femtrooper, Stormtrooper armor. It's a really good-looking armor for women. It's got a real feminine line without being the half-crop-top booby trooper thing. It's clearly a Stormtrooper, clearly armored, but I'm going to force myself to build that one clean just to get myself out of my own comfort zone. Anyway, I got Fett, I've got a Biker Scout, a Jedi. Eventually, I'll have a TD. I haven't jumped in on any of the Episode 7 stuff because I haven't seen enough of them. I need to see all of them before I commit to building anything. I may not build one until the trilogy's done.
Yeah.
Just because of the time and labor that goes into these things. Mm-hmm.
And it would suck to make something that's not actually accurate.
And then you see another one in the next movie, you're like, ooh!
This guy!
Yes.
Right. I don't know. I'm sure there will be some character in there that I will want to build just because... something about it catches my eye. So those are the only Star Wars costumes I have. My house is like a giant closet. Between my wife and I, the unfortunate part of a lot of our costumes is they have to go in their toolboxes, their rolling toolboxes. Because, Fett takes up so much room that I have to put it in something large. So I've got these totes they're this tall and they're just stacked to the ceiling. We have a rule in the house that if the house catches fire, the totes go out the window first. Then the pictures, then the computers, and then the humans.
Yeah.
Armor first.
Armor first? Wow.
Well, I have a piggyback question. When we go back to, just for a little bit, go back to you were saying that there's this grand misconception about the 501st and how, you know, you guys are elitists, you don't want people in. As somebody who's in the middle of her first application costume, I found it to be completely opposite. And want to talk about that a little bit. Like, the amount of resources outside of where to buy your stuff from, but the resources you guys provide for those of us trying to get in, the forums and the armor parties, and talk to a little bit more about the community of it, the hanging out together.
I'm very supportive.
Speaking about the opinion that some people have about us being elitist, I think it's people that got disenfranchised and got a bad taste in their mouth because they were denied, and they're just the people that like to complain and point fingers and not take responsibility for doing their homework. Along with helping people get in, even if they haven't submitted yet, is like what we're doing today is armor parties. My wife and I host them at my house all the time. Basically, we just invite people to come over and hang out in my garage, my workshop. If you have a costume to build, bring it. If you don't, come and hang out and watch us make stuff. You will pick things up, little tricks, little... Before I built my Boba, I had never built a costume in my life. I don't know. I didn't know what resin was. You know, I didn't know anything about this stuff. I didn't know about armor parties. Everything I learned literally from reading. It became a full-time job going to websites, forums, Some of the guys were 501st members. For Boba, I went to the Dented Helmet, which is a non... Most of the people in the 501st that have anything to do with Django or Boba are on the Dented Helmet. So by way of Legion members, I was kind of walked through what to do with my Boba. But for Stormtroopers and things like that and Vaders, anybody can sign up to those websites, the whitearmor.net for Stormtroopers and the Sith Lord Detachment and all those websites that will guide people to... Here's a walkthrough on how you do this, or here's... A lot of guys will post progress threads. One, so they can go back in time, and like with me, my current Boba is a Return of the Jedi. I'm building myself an Empire Strikes Back because I really like wearing a 9-pound jetpack. But I took pictures of me making my stuff so I can remember how I did it, because it was 3 years ago when I built my Boba. I had some great ideas at the time that I'm like, oh, how'd I do that? So... Because I took all these pictures, I uploaded a build thread, start to finish, on this part. And all that stuff is public information. And from a local standpoint, we get people over in collective areas, and we can swap ideas and help people. And like, I don't know the first thing about building a Stormtrooper. Nothing. My friend Carl has built several. So when I go to build mine and Nikki's, he's going to be my mentor. I've helped several people build Bobas because that's my area of speciality. Biker Scouts I know a little bit about because I've built two now. But yeah, I think some of this boils down to a lot of people like to pass on knowledge just because of their personality. Some people are just natural teachers or instructors. I'm one of those. I like sharing knowledge. None of this was mine. I didn't make any of this up. I am standing on the shoulders of other giants. I can paint what I paint really well because somebody did it before me. I'm parroting what they did. Yes, there's a measure of skill. My wife and I go back and forth about this all the time. She calls me an artist. I say no. I can replicate what I see. So there's a talent, but an artist, I don't buy that. But I have guided people through who knew nothing about airbrushes just like I did and said, this is where I started. And here's some things that I've learned and some stuff that I'm still learning. Because I like to teach, and a lot of us are like that. It's frustrating, but it's probably frustrating like when you have a teacher having a student that doesn't want to put forth the effort. It can be a little bit frustrating. There's several guys that I've tried to help Bobas, and I've given them every bit of resource that I have, except for one thing. And I'll get to that one thing in a minute. I share with them where I got everything, but I'm not going to hold your hand. And it's not to be a jerk. It's almost kind of a rite of passage. It means something to me personally to have built something. Mm-hmm. I do paint job commissions for people, and there's a guy that I'm building a Boba Fett for who's paying me to do it, and he just wants to open a box, put the costume on, and walk out the door. That's his proclivity. That's fine. I couldn't do that personally. I have to make it myself. I have to invest myself into it because it means something. I'm protective of that. I covet my armor. Well, I covet my wife's armor, and I didn't even make it. I'll throw myself in front of a car to stop that stuff from getting hurt. And I think when you pour yourself into something, especially something of this nature, it makes it that much more important and that much more meaningful. And then you take that and extrapolate that to you're taking this thing that you made and you're making people smile with it. You're making kids in hospitals forget for 15 minutes that they're sick, you know? Or if they're not sick, they're at a convention, and you see a little kid whose parents just showed him The Empire Strikes Back, and he sees Boba Fett and Vader, and he's like, what, loses his mind. We had a little kid, the funniest story, we had a little kid at a convention in Dallas that walked in. He couldn't have been 5, 6, maybe. And the only thing this kid could say was, it's really real. He said that for 15 minutes. When you hear react, and you'll hear adults do that too, they have the same reaction.
Yeah.
You know, when you've poured yourself into something like that and you get that reaction from people, you can't help but be like, ugh, nailed it. It's a unique thing to be a part of something like this. I mean, you know, most of us, I'm 42. I was 5 when Star Wars came out. They saw 5-year-old Josh and sunk a hook in and has never let go. Clearly. Fast forward 40 years later, you know, obviously in high school and junior high, I was trying to be the cool kid. So my Star Wars was kind of... My ex-wife's Star Wars was relegated to one room of the house. And then I heard about the Legion, and I was like, damn this. I get to be who I am, you know? Right, exactly. You know, I found a group of like-minded individuals that we get to do fun stuff.
Yeah.
I think I went off topic of your question.
No, that's
Sari.
A good, you know, I'm 41. I'll be 41 this year. And the same thing. I was hooked by Star Wars from the beginning, and it's just always been my thing. And knowing now I can dress up like a Jedi, and I have little kids coming over to me, and I let them hold my lightsaber, and it's just, it makes me happy.
Absolutely.
To make them happy. So I totally get it.
Oh, yeah.
You're preaching to the choir.
At this point, I mean, one of the very coolest things about it is not that because you love dressing up, you love the journey of making the costume, you love showing it to the kids. You love it. I love it. We like to laugh about cosplay's fun when you cosplay as a group, but this is a worldwide group of people that are as big a geek about Star Wars as you are and makes it cool.
There's a restaurant called Chewy's that every year they do a Children's Giving to Children's Parade. Through the middle of downtown Austin. I've done it 3 years now. There is nothing cooler than watching a formation of stormtroopers, 20, 30, however many show up, Vader in the front, and bounty hunters in the back just doing our, we ain't marching in formation. Y'all just go ahead, we'll catch up. But when you see them walk, there's just nothing like it. I mean, that's a formation of stormtroopers walking behind Vader.
And everybody watching says exactly the same thing that kid did. It's real.
It's real.
They're real.
I get goosebumps. Yeah, I have this look on my face when I see stormtroopers. I can't help it. I look like a total kid.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
It's like squee face.
It is the neatest thing. I mean, it took me probably, I've been in 3 years. November will be 3 years I've been in the Legion. It took me maybe 2 years. And even now it happens randomly. Like the first time I saw a costume that I hadn't seen for the first time. First time I saw an Emperor, first time I saw a Vader, I lost my mind, and I'm in Fett.
Right.
But I can't see it, you know, I'm looking at this, you know, and I'm literally just staring. It still blows me away. You know, I look at pictures that I take with other people in armor, like one of the guys that's in there, Ryan, is Darth Vader. He pulls out a great Vader, he's tall, looks great. And every time I see a picture of him and I standing together, I just think Empire Strikes Back. Every time. It just makes me laugh to see pictures of he and I together. It just works. I mean, our height and weight are proportionate to what it is on screen, and so it's perfect. And it's just, I just, like, that's not me. That's not me. That can't be me, you know?
So 5-year-old Josh is still...
Oh, absolutely. There's a guy here, I don't think he's coming today, but there's a guy here named Jamie who has an R2 unit, and it's a really nice R2 unit. He's actually been hired by LFL to use his R2 unit in appearances. Last year, I think it was on May the 4th, last year, NASA released a little movie and it had R2 where he saved the International Space Station. That was his R2 unit.
Oh, cool.
It's got every bell and whistle that R2 has, all of it. The guy who runs, Jamie, who operates him, is so adept at running R2. And he's half ninja because he fades into the background. He always...
Like, it took us all day at con watching the R2 unit go.
He's got a controller that's this big. It's got 97,000 features on it.
I swear he can do it behind his back.
He does. He'll sit there behind his back. Not only behind his back, but he'll carry on a conversation like you and I are now. And just,
and R2's over here playing.
And he'll just... Every once in a while, you'll lose eye contact with him. And R2 is just... going to town. I know who runs him because R2 has been to my house. I've seen R2 taken apart, so I know what it is. But every time I see it, I'm like, that's R2-D2. That's R2-D2. I don't care. I don't care. It's R2. It's real. It's really real. You know, that was the coolest thing in the world to me, to be able to interact with an R2 unit. I'm like, come on. Come on. I wanted to build one just to kind of put in the corner of my house just with the lights and maybe made a noise. And then I saw Jamie's. I'm like,
nope. No way.
I want that. And if I can't have that, nope. Right. So long story short, as far as with the 501st, again, this is the year of Star Wars. Episode 7's coming out. We've all waited 30 years for another one. This is something that people are thinking about again, which is very cool. What's your advice? Give us a checklist. How do we get started?
The biggest thing is pick a costume.
Start.
Pick a costume. Pick whatever character you liked. But for the 501st, it has to be bad guys or bounty hunters, or we have to be the fringe group or the absolute bad guys. If you want to do Jedi and Han Solos and Wookiees, that's all Rebel Legion. And
right, and they're out there. There's groups for
right.
them, too. But...
Pick whatever character you like. For myself, again, Fett was 8-year-old Josh saw Empire Strikes Back for the first time, and he was on screen for a total of like 4.5 minutes, and I'm like, wait a minute, who's that guy? Go back to him. I want more of him. Why does his armor look so different from everything else? So pick your costume, whatever makes you giggle, whatever you've always wanted to be. Start doing research. Again, I can only use Boba and my biker scout. For Boba, I spent 18 months on the Denon helmet reading forums and threads. I have probably 400 links on my computer to threads on different parts of Boba. And I would imagine most people in the Legion have a proportionate amount for whatever costume they're building as well. The ones that really get into it like I do. Biker Scouts are the same way. Biker Scouts is pathfinders.net, I believe. But all the websites for the research and the information part of it are all linked off the 501st.com. It's under the detachments. Each subsection of costumes make a detachment. Like, Stormtroopers are white armor detachment. Bounty Hunters, the Bounty Hunter detachment. Clone Troopers are... Clone Trooper detachment, for lack of a better term. Vader is Sith Lord. Vader, Palpatine, all those things are Sith Lord. And then there's... Anyway, go to the 501st and pick that. On the 501st is what's called the CRL, which is the Costume Resource Library. And that is basically the pick list for... Or this is the what has to be there for that costume. Some of them are fairly straightforward, maybe a page or two printed, and then you have the extremes. Fett was 9 pages printed. It's just ridiculous. And then on top of that, for most of the costumes, there's the basic approval, which is great, and then you've got the people who just obsessively compulse over this stuff. They go for Bounty Hunter, it's level, infamous level, which is like you walked off the screen. And it just means you put that much more effort into your costume. You found some of the original parts or had them machined or something like that.
Don't be afraid to start because of the research, but know that that's going to be a big part of what you got to do.
Absolutely. The research is key because these things can be very, very expensive, and you need to know what you're doing before you tear into a $400 piece that you just... Either something you either made completely from scratch yourself, or again, for Boba, my jetpacks cost. I buy them, two or three guys I've got that make really good jetpack molds or castings, and they're $350 unpainted, unassembled. And so before I go in and make some monumental mistake, like I'm here today sandblasting a jetpack because it was improperly prepped the first time by other people, I have to undo a mistake. That's a $350 mistake plus several hours, weeks of work to get it to right. So the research will prevent, it'll actually in the end save you money and afford you a little bit more sleep and a whole lot less frustration.
Measure twice and cut once. Project. Right.
Yeah, measure 56 times and it's pretty nutty, some of the research. I mean, it became a full-time job almost for me. I'm a paramedic by trade, and so I'm at a station for 24 hours. Well, if we're not running calls, in the interim of doing my job, I was doing research. And then on my days off, I was doing research. Sometimes 8-10 hours a day, just I would individual piece. Okay, let's work on the rangefinder to the helmet. What does that look like, kind of thing? Or how did you guys attach it? How do you make it go up and down? How do you distress it? How do you run lights? You know, anything that costume requires, you have to do the research. Some of them are deceptively complicated. I picked Boba out of absolute stupidity, for the most part. I knew I wanted to join the Legion. I was pretty sure I wanted to do Boba Fett eventually. But I honestly thought it would be easier and cheaper than a Stormtrooper. Now, here's why. Look at Boba. There's a helmet, there's a jetpack, there's some body armor, and it's a flight suit. It's not that much armor. It can't be that bad. Look at a Stormtrooper. It's head-to-toe armor. It's got to be insanely difficult and insanely expensive. Wrong. By a factor of 10, wrong. But by the time I got to that point in my build and my research, I was either committed or needed to step away completely from it. So research will save you that headache as well. I seriously consider, once I realized how much I had already spent on boba and how much more I was going to have to spend to get it to where I wanted it, I was like, oh my God, you know, I don't know that I can do this. But then I was like, screw it, I just won't eat. Even stormtroopers that now that I've seen them take on, those are even complicated because of the strapping underneath to make them wear right. Mm-hmm. All of these, most of these things come in literally vacuum poured plastic where you have to cut, trim, sand, paint what needs to be painted. You have to run all the strapping. I don't know how to do that stuff, but there are people who do, and that's where your research part comes in. For mine, I didn't know the first thing about airbrushing. I certainly didn't know anything about what colors to paint Boba Fett other than green. No. The helmets alone have, the Return of the Jedi helmet has 23 colors on it. Doesn't look like it, but it does.
Yeah.
I didn't know that, again, until I started researching, and I have thousands of links for painting a helmet. You just have to do the homework. It could be kind of...
Do the research first, and you'll know what you're getting yourself into.
Absolutely.
Don't be afraid to start. There are people out there who are willing to share what they've learned, so they'll kind of help you through. Something else you touched on that I want to reiterate, don't be afraid to get in touch and become involved beforehand. Be a handler. Talk to people. Go to armor parties. Know who's going to be there, who's going to be in your group.
It comes in handy. You get an in, and you, the armor parties alone will teach you or show you tricks to building things that you would have no concept or knowledge of without. So that's where the benefit of armor parties comes in. And the benefit of handling is, one, we get to know you. Two, we will develop a level of trust because we are trusting you to be our extra set of eyes and ears. And you just get to meet people. I didn't know a soul in the 501st, and I put Boba Fett on in a parking garage with two friends who knew nothing about what was going on and walked in and introduced myself to the Legion. Didn't know them. Wish I'd have known a couple of guys beforehand. Just would have made that transition easier. Yeah, I mean, we're all giant nerds. I mean, don't be scared of us. We're giant nerds, really.
Nobody on our show is going to be scared of you.
Yeah, I mean, don't be intimidated by us. I mean, there are people that... I met a guy once at a convention who apparently follows my paint stuff that I do on Facebook, and he built a Boba Fett, and it was a fantastic Boba Fett. But when he met me, he was like, he was nervous. I didn't know how to respond to that because I'm Josh. I'm not anything.
You're still playing dress up.
Right. I mean, and this guy, I mean, it was literally like he didn't know what to do with his hands. Kind of thing, and I was like, I was like, does he have like a twitch or what? He walks away, and my wife's like, I think that guy was nervous to meet you, and he was like, I don't think I want to put mine on after seeing yours. I'm like, put it on. You built it, put it on. And he came out, and I was like, man, that's fantastic. So you know, even if there are issues with your costume that you're pretty sure you didn't necessarily do it right, put it on. We'll go, hey man, here's some things you can do to make it better. There's a little girl in Austin right now that has one of the coolest Ahsokas that I have ever seen. I mean, this little girl, she puts that stuff on and she just becomes Ahsoka. She is fierce, man. Her headdress was just it was a Halloween store Ahsoka's headtails. And I talked to her mom. I'm like, all right, this kid did an amazing job with this costume. We can tune it and make it amazing-er. You know, and that's how most of us approach this stuff is my boba, I am... finally done with my boba after 3 years. Like, there is nothing else that I'm going to... Well, I'm finally done with my Return of the Jedi boba after 3 years. I was constantly upgrading and changing and improving. And so even after your costume is done and submitted and you're in, there are still things that you're going to do because you're going to wear it and go, that didn't work. Like any other costume. You do a test wear on it, you're like, all right, that sucked. Or you'll see somebody... You'll get to talking to people who build costumes like what you're wearing and you figure out how they did it and... That looks much better than mine. How did you do that? And there's a whole lot of information swapping that goes on.
Right. And once you've gone through the process, you've picked your costume, you've started it, you've reached out, you know your people, you've got it, you've taken your pictures, you've submitted, you get denied. Don't freak out.
Don't freak out and don't throw your hands up in the air and say, well, F those guys. Most of the GMLs, the people who do the judging of the costumes, and I hate using the word judging, evaluation of the costumes, most of us, I would think, would send recommendations on here's why you got denied instead of no. Thanks, but no. Obviously, the level that that person's going to put into what needs to be fixed and telling that person is going to vary from person to person. Like I said, yesterday I wrote an hour-long thing on here's what you need to work on. Here's all the, I broke it down piece by piece, copy-pasted the CRL stuff to the email and, you know, LinkedIn websites and things like that. Because I want people to do this. It's fun. So don't throw your hands up in the air. Don't get frustrated. Don't make whatever changes you need to make. And if you don't understand, email the GML back and say, I don't really get what you mean. Or is there somebody that can help me, guide me through this part of the process? Speaking for myself personally and the GMLs that I know, we're happy to do that. That's our job. We're the guild membership liaison. We're bringing people in. Right. All right. Hey, come join us. Be nerds with us kind of thing. Make what changes need to be made to the armor and then resubmit. And if there's still something, if there's still something, you just have to kind of work through it.
Yeah.
Some costumes get in first shot. You never know. My Boba got in first shot. I having nothing to base that upon, I was like, okay, cool. But I tell people that story, and they're like, what? How did a Fett first try? I'm like, yeah. I don't know. I mean, okay, you know. All right.
It's okay to be a little braggy. It's pretty epic.
I don't know. I still don't think of myself as an artist and a builder because I know I can't draw. Like, stick figures are beyond me. And they're lopsided. The heads are crooked. If you gave me a canvas and some paint, I don't know what you would get. But it wouldn't be art at all.
It'd be distressed.
There's just something about this process that my brain went click. So I don't think of my armor and my kit or the way I do anything unique at all. So when people freak out about me getting in first try with a Boba, I'm like, if you say that's good, then yay me, but all right, moving on, you know?
I have a bachelor's degree in fine art, and I wrote an article about cosplay, and that called cosplayers and costumers artisans, artists. I mean, it is an art.
Absolutely.
So it doesn't matter if you can't draw a stick figure. This is an art. Well, it's a different form of art, and it's a form of expressing. It's an expression of a passion, of something that you enjoy, and so that is an art.
Like I said, my wife and I go round and round about this, but I'm always measuring myself up against her, who paints, sculpts, carves.
Uh-huh. She says you're an artist.
Sews, which is black magic.
From my point of view, that just exactly means she is qualified to make that assumption.
Yes. Yeah. So now you have two votes.
She and I have, it's been a debate. I don't know how many hours we've debated this very thing and without any sort of consensus, but she's right by default because she's my wife, I guess.
Well, we're on the subject of, do you have any
like
more
said,
questions?
Speaking of your lovely wife.
Yes. We were going to interview her. She's under the weather, but we'll get to her, hopefully, later on.
But I understand you guys have a remarkable story that's very 501st romantic. So yeah. I'd like to hear your side of it. Yeah. How do you feel? Do you feel Sherry?
Yeah, absolutely. It starts out kind of Empire Strikes Back-ish in the sense that it begins on a down note. Our divorces were finalized within like 2 days of each other, same year, same everything. We both got into the Legion within like 4 days of each other and didn't know each other through any of this. We didn't meet until well after. I'd been in the Legion, Nick was in the Legion, we were friends on Facebook, just through 501st. Hey, there's somebody 501st. I actually hired her to do the cloth work on my biker scout because I think sewing is black magic. I don't understand it. It's voodoo, and I'll have no part of it. She lived in Louisiana, and I lived here in Austin, or here in Round Rock at the time, and she was coming here to make sure it fit.
That's
so
legit.
She was going to come stay at the house for as long as it took to finish this cloth part, and I was like, I've got a spare bedroom. You can have the master bedroom. I'll move in the spare bedroom, blah, 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 blah. Well, she got to my house May 19th, 2 years ago, May. She hasn't left since. I was pretty sure I was going to marry her within about 4 days. I was finishing up a Empire Strikes Back Boba Fett helmet. We were going to go to, he was going to be at a convention in San Antonio in a couple of months, and so I was painting this helmet specifically to have him sign it. There was a Comic-Palooza was coming up within like a week or so of her getting to the house, and she has Bosch, and she needed to do some soldering attachments on her helmet. So I'm in my garage on my workbench painting this helmet, doing my thing. I look over, she's got her helmet inverted, snout down, and she's in there soldering connections on her helmet. And I literally stopped what I was doing, stepped back, and went, are you effing kidding me? This is what I've been looking for and didn't even know it. And I pretty much knew, all right, this is pretty awful, because I know what's coming. You know, I mean, I know the thing that I said was never going to happen is about to happen. So my mother loves throwing it in my face. Every time we're not going to get married again, huh? Shut up, Mom. We do start doing conventions, start doing events together, and realize how much fun it is to do these events with somebody who's as into doing these events as you are. It's her ex-husband and my ex-wife are kind of the same mind. I actually thought about introducing them. Wanted nothing to do with costuming, wanted nothing to do with Star Wars, didn't get it, didn't want to get it. So for she and I to go from that extreme to where we are now, we were like, oh my God, this is what it was kind of supposed to be. So fast forward to August of that same year. She gets there in May. We're now in August of that same year. We go to Space City. I propose to her in Boba Fett armor. She's in Bosch. Somebody filmed it, and then they edited in the Star Wars scroll to the whole thing and made music and all this stuff. So I proposed to her in armor, which I had to take my helmet off, and I had to have two people help me to kneel down in Fett, because you just can't do that easily. The first words out of her mouth are, what the F are you doing? Me being me, I'm like, what the F do you think I'm doing? Go through my little proposal spiel. She says yes. Bye. We kiss. Crowd erupts in cheer. There's a con in Dallas called AllCon. The 501st just converges on this little hotel. It's a nothing con, but it is a four-day just party. It's immense amount of fun. So once we got engaged, the Legion, it was in front of the Legion table in the main breezeway of this con, and our command staff said, you're getting married at AllCon. And we went, I guess we're getting married at AllCon.
All right.
Pretty much knowing that we were going to have a Star Wars wedding. I mean, come on.
It's kind of the theme right now.
Right. What we didn't know was how much of a Star Wars wedding we were going to have. We hadn't worked out any details. What ended up happening is we got interviewed. He's going to kill me. I can't remember his name, his podcast name. Okay. Anyway, he interviews us afterwards, and I said something about, apparently we're getting married at AllCon, the same day of the proposal. We had talked about nothing. Well, the organizers of AllCon see it and contacted us and said, what do you need? I don't know yet, man. You know, this just happened, dude. Time, whoa. They ended up giving us the largest room in the hotel for our wedding. Django was my best man. There was an Imperial officer that was another groomsman. Nikki had one version of Padme as a bridesmaid, and then a couple of Sith acolytes as a bridesmaid. My mother, we designed a custom noble Mandalorian gown with matching helmet for my mother. My mom, at first she was like, I don't want to wear a helmet. But I painted her blue helmet, Mandalorian stuff. She kept it. Miss, I don't want a helmet. She kept it. Well, she didn't keep, she kept it, and then she gave it back to me and told me to put padding in it and finish it and bring it back. And I said, yes, ma'am. My aunt and uncle came in from Seattle. They dressed up as burnt Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru.
Oh, awesome.
Because they were my aunt and uncle. I thought, all right, that's the funniest thing I've ever seen. We opened the convention up to the con. Nick's wedding march was the Imperial March. Doors opened. Flank of stormtroopers walk in, lie in the front of the stage. I come in off the side, stand there. We got married by Anakin. A friend of ours dressed up as Anakin. Nick is escorted by Vader.
What is Nikki wearing? I forgot to ask.
Bosch.
Bosch, that's right.
She's in Bosch. Yeah. R2 was our DJ, the same R2 by the guy Jamie.
Nice.
R2 was our DJ playing all the music. Once it was done, we walked out to the throne room theme at the end of episode 4, the medal ceremony theme, underneath the arch of lightsabers. And then I don't really remember much after that, the rest of that day. I mean, it just kind of happened in a blur. But yeah, Star Wars wedding.
That was awesome.
There you go. When you say that you'll meet your family and your people and you find your people, you sure did.
Not to sound hokey and romance novelish, but I found my soulmate. I mean, I found the other half of me. I had no intention of it. I was so happy being in the 501st and just doing events as Boba Fett that I was actually pretty content to not ever get married or date, or I was having a good time. Well, the universe said...
And you can't deny that you guys make quite possibly the most perfect pair of bounty hunter geeky awesomeness that ever did was.
Yay!
It's pretty cool.
It is fun. The ironic thing is, other than Boba, Bosch is my second most favorite costume in the entire Star Wars universe. Again, because it's so unique. So to have my own Bosch, it's pretty awesome, right? I mean, I married Princess Leia. I mean, come on. Really. For a Star Wars geek, you know, to find Princess Leia who, you know, kind of could pull off a really convincing Leia outside of the armor. Yeah, absolutely. We've had the running joke of Princess Leia didn't marry Han Solo. She ran off with Boba because he was a lot cooler kind of thing.
That's awesome.
Well, you guys have photographic evidence that that's the way it went down.
I don't know what karma I racked up somewhere to fall into this, but... Okay. Good on me.
All those troops at the children's hospital. Something. That helps out.
Yeah, that does.
Something.
We appreciate you taking time out of your working on your armor to come talk to us about this. We appreciate it very much. So,
absolutely.
It's great to meet you.
Yeah.
Nice to meet you guys, too.
We'll put all the links to stuff in our show notes, and we'll send you the episode when it's
done. Oh, awesome.
So have you ever considered joining a costume club like the 501st? Do you think you might join them after hearing our interview? I think I might. What did you think about his wedding story? And what about those awesome bounty hunter photos in our show notes? Call our Google voicemail line to give us your thoughts on this or any other episode by dialing 432-363-4742. If you haven't subscribed to our podcast yet, please add us to your go-to show mix. You'll be automatically updated once a week with Anomaly and Anomaly Supplemental Awesomeness. If you like Anomaly and you like content like this, do us a favor and rate us on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you listen to us. Give us as many stars as you think we deserve. Hopefully that's a 5-star review, but, you know, 4 is okay too. The reviews and ratings you give us not only makes us feel loved, but it helps other people like you find the show. The next Anomaly Supplemental, which will be posted on August 23rd, will feature an interview with Kayla LaFrance from TBS's King of the Nerds. Anomaly's next episode is Sunday, August 30th. We've invited two of our friends who recently attended San Diego Comic-Con for the first time to come on the show and tell us about their experience at the convention. If you liked this interview, check out our interview with the founder and co-owner of Ultra Sabers Lightsabers, Alex Buckner. You'll also like our episode on Attack of the Clones entitled Anakin the Creepy Creeper, as well as our commentary on The Phantom Menace called The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. I'll add links to all those episodes in the show notes. Don't forget to check those out. Again, keyword 501st in the search box on our website at anomalypodcast.com. Swing by that website to subscribe to our podcast, our blog, and our monthly newsletter. You'll also find the hundreds of episodes we've recorded since 2007. Only 50 of our most recent episodes are available in iTunes, Stitcher, and Zune, or wherever you're finding us. Find many more additions to our show by going to anomalypodcast.com, rolling over episodes and blog, and clicking on episode/show notes. You'll find our earliest episodes in our archive, which is located under bonus in our menu. Like our Facebook page and join our Facebook group. The Facebook group is our forum. There's over 300 listeners who regularly post there. It's a cool place to hang out. Follow us on Twitter at Anomaly Podcast. We're also on Tumblr, Pinterest, Goodreads, and Google Plus. You can find all that stuff, once again, at anomalypodcast.com. Thanks so much for listening today. I hope you come back next week, and the week after, and the week after that. I'm Jen, and you've been listening to the Anomaly Podcast, where female and fandom converge.
Gamma Quadrant Golf Clap.